Brad Hayes, of course, is Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College. We're very lucky to have him. We call him our professor in residence, and it's wonderful that you're here on the Congressional Corner to talk about things in the dog days of summer. So let's start with the Supreme Court. You're a Supreme Court scholar, Brad, and I know that you're particularly interested in the decision to uphold subsidies in Obamacare, for want of a better word.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really kind of interesting case in a variety of ways, right? It was another attempt by kind of activists on the right to undo Obamacare by putting it into that death spiral by cutting out some of the subsidies. But I think what was so interesting, right, it was a 6-3 decision that ended up supporting the Affordable Care Act and the subsidies, was that it basically said that the court isn't willing to entertain just any old conservative challenge to a kind of liberal policy, that there has to be some kind of rationality to it. There has to be a good case for it. And this was a case that it was a strain to read it. And you kind of got that in Roberts's opinion. I mean, he writes at one point in time that a fair reading of legislation demands a fair understanding of the legislative plan, right?
What was intended?
Right, exactly. So you just cannot ignore the architecture of the entire plan and focus in on you know, just a few words.
You can't play gotcha.
Right. I think that this is interesting in the sense that some people were really pointing out that this was a Supreme Court term where liberals won, right? They win on same-sex marriage. They win on the Affordable Care Act. They win on discrimination in housing. And some people were willing to kind of speculate about, maybe a liberal trend emerging on the court.
Interesting.
But I think the answer to that's probably not, right? That what we're kind of seeing is that the court is actually in some ways willing to hear challenges to liberal commitments that should be on firm legal footing, right? But, conservatives have challenged even precedent that is on, you know, been established for a long time. And that the court, even by hearing these cases, suggests that many liberal commitments are you know, very much in the legal crosshairs. And you could look to things like the court's ruling on the Fair Housing Act this past term. And the Fair Housing Act was passed in 1968. And for, you know, decades and decades, it has been permissible to hold discrimination as illegal, even if there isn't kind of evidence of intent to discriminate, right? But that was challenged, and the Supreme Court took that seriously as a challenge. Now, that position prevailed, precedent prevailed there. But you know, the fact that that's even in the on the table suggests a more conservative agenda, and so if we're looking, for example, to next term, there are lots of issues on the table that I think are going to be very problematic for the left. In other words, I think that there are some things like affirmative action that the left has won on over time that are very much in jeopardy. So it was a bit of a surprise that the Supreme Court decided to hear yet another affirmative action case. It's the second case it will have heard in 3 years that may suggest that they will bar the use of race in admissions, which would significantly reduce the number of Black and Hispanic students at pretty much every selective public college and university across the country. And adding to this, Elena Kagan, Justice Kagan, has recused herself because she worked on this case when she was Solicitor General. And, you know, Anthony Kennedy, who sometimes we talk about as the swing vote, he's never voted to uphold affirmative action, right? So this puts affirmative action very much in jeopardy. And we could tell a similar story in the frame of voting rights. So the court has agreed to define the meaning of one person, one vote, right? One person, one vote is kind of one of the fundamental ways that we understand voting rights in the United States. And in the past, the districts, whether we're talking about state legislative districts or even local, or whether we're talking about congressional districts, that one person, one vote has been about the number of people in a district, not the number of eligible voters. Okay, but this is being challenged now by some individuals on the right that are attempting to have the Supreme Court interpret one person, one vote as meaning that voting districts should have the same number of eligible voters, not the same number of people. Why this is important is that counting all people rather than all voters amplifies the voting power of places with larger number of residents who are not eligible to vote. That tends to be urban places, places that vote Democratic, right? So that the ruling that—
Let me just interrupt and say also, I think you mean, you've said this, but basically it ought to be underlined. This is one of the reasons why so many people in the Republican Party basically sign up. They are voters. And so many people who are at the lower end of the social spectrum don't. So this is where they're going.
That's certainly true, but it's not even just about those who might otherwise be eligible to vote. Mm. It's about those that may not be eligible to vote, whether that be legal aliens in the country, whether that be about children. We count children right now, and you know, so that's clearly
well. If you were
going to
predict, Brad Hayes, what would you predict?
Prediction's a little sticky here, but I am not confident.
Well, you're a political scientist, and science is the ability to predict.
I'm also uncomfortable with calling myself a scientist. I think that there's reason to be concerned about the continuation of one person, one vote based on the number of persons. Mm. What we're going to see, I think, in particular, is an impact in certain border states, right? You're going to see an impact in California, in Texas, in Arizona, and even Nevada, where you have a larger number of Hispanic individuals in the country who are not eligible to vote.
So we only have 2 minutes left here, Brad, but what about the gerrymander? The court has begun to get interested in whether or not self-serving politicians could draw their own districts.
Right. So this past term... gets at that a little bit indirectly. There was a case coming out of Arizona where they asked essentially whether under the Constitution it was permissible for voters of a state to strip their state legislatures of that power and then to put it in the hands of an independent commission. And the Supreme Court upheld that. They said that basically there's no bar that when the Constitution refers to the state legislature, it's referring to the state legislative power, which can reside in the hands of the people through referendum. And so that suggests that there are still pathways to creating independent commissions that can go about redrawing district lines in a way that's not political, that's supposed to be politically neutral.
Which is pretty good, because years ago, Felix Frankfurter, then on the Supreme Court, said we can't deal with this because we have to stay out of the political thicket. So maybe they're evolving in that area, too.
They have evolved in that area. And so this is obviously a very contentious area, but it's an area where the court at least has not been outwardly hostile to the existence of commissions that can create neutrality. Now, whether that's an idea that's really catching on it's catching on, I think, is in the people like it. And so if you look at public opinion polls, there tends to be fairly high levels of approval of such things. But state legislatures have been...
They don't want to do it.
They don't,
Well, they want to take their own power away.
Exactly. So,
but the fact of the matter is that in New York State, they set up a phony Maloney thing, which is an outside group, but that eventually has to report back to the legislature. If they don't like it, they can veto it.
I think which shows then the difficulty, even if it's legally permissible to do this, there's still all kinds of very, very challenging political obstacles to reform.
However, with one thing said, with all the things you've said, that even in this case, with the court maybe moving a little bit left, one Citizens United trumps everything else.
Absolutely. I mean, the floodgates are open. And, you know, again, we see that kind of effort to enervate the left coming from these legal challenges on the right. The public sector unions are very much in the crosshairs for the next term. And so, you know, this is one of those areas that, you know, yet again, the Supreme Court may advantage the right in politics.
Brad Hayes, we love having you here. And when we come back the next time, I want to start where we left off, because I'm so fascinated by the power that the Supreme Court has in this country and what's been going on. Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure.